Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel. So commenting about what this incursion, now is it day 17? It's been going on a very long time. So although the thing is that they're scarcely expanding the area that they're in, and some people say, well, the Ukrainians are present, they don't necessarily control all of it. Right, so over 1,000 square kilometers. And put that in context, that's about as much ground as Russia has gained in 6 months of attacking in East Ukraine, and obviously all not in more than one big chunk, as in Kursk Oblast, but spread out along all along the front line, which is several hundred kilometers long. You know, so they just move forward maybe 10 kilometers at their maximum point of penetration, the Russians, in exchange for quite easily 150,000 casualties, which doesn't mean 150,000 dead. You know, perhaps a quarter of that is dead. An awful lot of equipment has been destroyed. There, what the sort of hardware they lost, like I said, tanks, armored personnel carriers, howitzers, infantry fighting vehicles, anything else, all sorts of missiles, drones used or often shot down without actually causing any casualties. So, but anyway, that's partly because the Ukrainians attacked somewhere that's very lightly defended. They face minimal opposition. But the surprising thing, perhaps, has been Putin hasn't prioritized repelling this. He might have said, just forget advancing in East Ukraine. We'll do that later, and withdraw a lot of troops, tens of thousands, throw them into Kursk Oblast, and just sheer numbers will prevail. And that's normally how they manage to win. It is simply numbers, not maneuverability, not skill, you know, the quality of their training, or indeed the quality of their weaponry. It's obviously numbers of troops, but also numbers of shells, things like that, just volume of fire rather than accuracy or range. But to many people's surprise, and perhaps Ukraine's chagrin, he hasn't done that. Now, Putin is perhaps not quite as stupid as he may seem. There may be some method to his madness, saying, well, you know, 1,000 square kilometers in the context of a country of 18 million square kilometers is nothing. So this is nothing to worry about. And the Ukrainians won't go too far because they realize their supply lines will be overstretched. They'll be too spread out. They could be too easily enveloped, something like that. So we'll contain this eventually, and we'll squeeze them out eventually. We'll leave it a few weeks, maybe even a few months. And obviously, within 2 months of winter, with the weather be so cold that people don't advance that much usually in winter. I mean, late October would be so muddy that that's a big problem. When it's frozen solid in December, that actually makes it a little bit easier. Not as easy as it is now. Bear in mind, this is prime campaigning season. It's more idyllic. The ground is hard and dry, and so road vehicles can go off-road quite easily. Obviously, that's much more difficult when it gets very muddy in late autumn or starts to freeze. The one thing is, sometimes it's just so hot, it's a bit difficult on the soldiers, but I mean, hey, tough, they got to cope with it. So that's why I say Putin says, they want me to withdraw troops from East Ukraine. They want me to slow down or stop the onslaught in East Ukraine. I'm not going to play their game. They're banking on me doing that, some respite for their soldiers to rebuild their defenses, to whatever, to possibly withdraw to a more defensible position. No, I'm not going to do that. So there'll be no let up in that attack, and they will eventually crumble. They're doing this because they know slowly but surely Russia is winning in East Ukraine. Even though it's going forward at a snail's pace, that could speed up. And at some point, we don't know when, the Ukrainians around Pokrovsk will crack and an orderly retreat will turn into a rout. They're already forcibly evacuating civilians from Pokrovsk. Obviously, something like 95% of the civilian population left anyway. There's some geriatric said, I'm just so old, I'm going to die in a year or two anyway. I don't care. I've lived here for 90 years. In some cases, I was here when the Germans were here. This is my home. I'm not leaving. Some of whom might even be of pro-Russian sympathies, ethnically, linguistically Russian, or some reminiscences, sentimental feeling, nostalgia for the Soviet era. Feel it's somehow coming back. Well, I suppose it is, but without even the social justice such as it was. Zelensky was thinking that Putin will blink, will think, I can't allow this incursion to go on so long and be contained. And so that's why they sent some rather sort of third-rate troops, reserve line troops, people have been rushed through basic training, these teenage conscripts. And that's why they fell quite easily. Some of the Akhmat battalion, as in, was more than a battalion despite the name, they're Chechens, named after President Ramzan Kadyrov's late father, who was assassinated by hardline Chechen separatists. So and Putin actually just went to visit Chechnya for the first time in 13 years partly to express his gratitude, because Kadyrov claims falsely that proportionally the Chechens have fought in this war more than any other Russian republic or region. Actually, it's the Buryats, but Chechens pretty high up out of the 85 federal subjects, because some of them are republics, if they're merely a homeland of an indigenous ethnic minority, others are on regions. You know, it's a Krai if it's by the coast, or by the border, as in meaning edge, and it's Oblast if it's not. Moscow and St. Petersburg, the lowest proportionately. And obviously the socioeconomic factors. So if you're upper class, the chance of being drafted is very, very low indeed. Some will volunteer, but you know, money talks, they got connections, and they'll just not be anywhere near harm's way. So Zelensky thinking that Putin would blink. So in order to begin to do that, you're going to have to spook him a bit more and actually be even more audacious. A dash on Kursk. The one thing is, the Ukrainians have taken down those three bridges over the River Seim, which might be cutting off the retreat for some Russian units, meaning they can't get more munitions in. He's thought up to 3,000 Russians be trapped and obliged to capitulate. On the other hand, the Russians have built a pontoon bridge. Perhaps surprising, the Ukrainians didn't kill them or trying to do that, because obviously a pontoon bridge takes a few hours, sometimes even a few days to build, depending on the size of it. And that's a lot of military engineers there in one place, kind of a sitting duck. And they have done this before when the Russians have built pontoon bridges, attempted to cross them earlier in the war. Unless this is part of the strategy, you want a pontoon bridge, you'd rather that they retreat, would rather they be reinforced. Anyway, that's sort of educated guesswork. But one thing about destroying those bridges, it does tell us another thing, is the Ukrainians were not planning to advance over that river. Because if they were, they've just made themselves a lot more difficult for themselves. And yes, they have amphibious vehicles, but nowhere near enough. I mean, they've tried it with very little success over the Dnipro near Kherson. And they managed to hold on that foothold on the east bank of the Dnipro, but not managed to expand there. The Russians made strenuous efforts to hem them in, have not quite driven them out. Admittedly, the Dnipro is much wider at that point than the River Seim. So what's going to happen? I mean, I think at this rate, the Ukrainians are going to hold some of Kursk Oblast for at least several more weeks. So the Russians are just not prioritizing, and there's no indication they're going to do so. Now, how Zelensky could blink is say that the Russians, they are actually advancing towards Pokrovsk and elsewhere, and that is a nodal point, is vital for logistics, because there's several roads and railway lines that go into there. And to supply the troops at the front, you need so many trucks going down those roads with so many tons of ammunition, so much in terms of rations, fuel not so much because they're hardly driving anywhere. But anyway, if that falls, that cuts off a lot of roads. And yes, you can go off-road, but they're not as many off-road vehicles. It's kind of rather more difficult. And going on the road, though, is a little bit risky, because that's where the enemy expects you to be, as in to destroy you. I know you can say, well, you can see everything these days with satellites, with drones and stuff like that. Yeah, but there's got to be someone watching that, taking in that information and making a decision to act on it. Because there are too many moving parts here for them to do that. The Russians just don't have enough time to say, well, that truck's here, that truck's there. If we know there's a road they very, very regularly use, then that doesn't take much surveillance. So hoping that Zelensky will say, we're going to have to pull out of Kursk Oblast, forget that, we did it, it was just a demonstration, we proved a point, and those crack troops, we had to put them into the front line, maybe around Pokrovsk, to try and save that, so we're not driven back too fast. At the moment, there's no indication that they're going to do that. But, it, you know, the Ukrainians could have gone a bit further, a bit faster. It makes me cast my mind back to June 2023, the Wagner coup, when Yevgeny Prigozhin, when they crossed the international border from Ukraine back into Russia, took, wasn't it, Rostov-na-Donu, and then advanced to Voronezh, which is like, 300 kilometers south of Moscow, something like that. And so they went, was it 800 kilometers in just about 14 hours? And had they gone on for like another 3 hours, they would have been the outskirts of Moscow. But they didn't go to the gamble. And it shows how rubbish Putin's army is, that some of the units stood aside and didn't go for it. And okay, they would have fought against the Ukrainians. They didn't strive to attack Wagner Group for a number of reasons. Partly, Wagner Group has a reputation being hard as nails, and these weren't just the prison recruits. Some of them were the really battle-hardened veterans. And they're often regarded as really great guys in Russian society, you know, idolized. And the other one is, because they had some sympathy for you know, Prigozhin's complaints about Putin. And he said, well, I'm not going for Putin, it's Gerasimov I want. And Sergei Shoigu, who was obviously removed a few months later from his position, tacitly confirming the complaints about his gross underperformance. Yeah, and obviously the Air Force tried to destroy that Wagner column of those mutineers, but and several aircraft, fixed-wing aircraft and helicopters got shot down. So, but then again, it's partly because Putin was so cautious, was not willing to throw more at it. If he had, they would have overcome Wagner's air defenses. And again, why is he not using his air force strenuously to drive out the Ukrainians? Because he guards that as too precious. He mustn't risk his air force. So we know that that's his Achilles heel. That's his sore point. Ouch, that will make him back off. So that's why it's so important that Western countries authorize Ukraine to use ATACMS to a longer range, Storm Shadows and so on. Russia's got us at 61 air bases, so many of which would be 250 kilometers of where the Ukrainian military is now, because that's Western Russia, the most densely populated area, and force Putin to move his air force units further back. Another thing is, I say, you know, 1,000 square kilometers is nothing out of 17, or was it 18 million square kilometers. But then again, this is particularly fertile land. It's in a strategically important area. It's not that far from Moscow, a few hundred kilometers. Belarus, cutting off the route to Belarus. But the pipelines, the Druzhba, as in friendship pipeline, ironically named, going all the way through Ukraine to Hungary onto Austria. So that could be destroyed. So they can never send oil or gas down that again. But the Ukrainians actually haven't done that. We know that the Hungarians are hacked off with this being jeopardized, because they just took a decision today that saying that you know, that the Ukrainian refugees are going to have their residency status cancelled in Hungary. There are about 30,000 of them, because they sense that under the Prime Minister Orban Viktor, they are not especially welcome. They've often transited Hungary, gone on to other countries where they're received rapturously. Well, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. It was great to meet a fan on the train today, just by chance. If you want to email me, it's gcallahan@gmail.com. Gcallahan spelled GCALLAGHANNNN@gmail.com. Okay, there's a silent G in Callahan, Gcallaghan, and it's NNN, triple N at the end of Callahan@gmail.com. Okay, goodbye, everyone. Thank you.